Good evening, everyone. Just looking around to see who's here this evening. Nice to see your faces. I don't know about all of you, but I've been holding in my heart a kind of place of witness as I look at the daily news. I don't watch a lot of video footage. I don't watch it on TV, but I check, you know, the New York Times, a couple of other sources. And such anguish in the United States right now. Anguish, anger, confusion, fear. Yeah, so I think it feels like really a time to look deeply into the roots of injustice, into human greed, hate, and ignorance. And to really examine how we can rectify injustice at every level, in individual, societal, institutional levels. And although these Tibetan Lojong teachings that we've been looking at for some weeks now might seem to mostly address our sort of personal inner practice life, that is not the case. These practices extend outwards without limit and touch every aspect of our lives and our collective lives as well, because that is the nature of our lives. We're not bounded individuals. So I'd like us particularly to keep that in mind as we go further through the Lojong teachings tonight. Looks like probably everybody here this evening has already attended at least some of these previous sessions. So I won't go over the basics of these Tibetan a set of Tibetan teachings, this particular set from the 12th century. And we've drawn a lot from Norman Fisher's book, Training in Compassion. Last week, there's 59 of these slogans. And by the way, I don't even like the word slogan for these. I think of them as practices, not just, slogans you can put on a t-shirt, although that might not be a bad idea, but actual practices that we engage actively in our daily lives. So there are 59 of them. Last week, Michael got as far as the 29th. So, we're not exactly speeding through. And he was in the seventh point. Eight clusters of these slogans. 8 points of mind training. So we're not going to cover the rest in detail. Michael and I were discussing, we've already extended this Dharma seminar, and we were supposed to wrap up tonight, but there's still, what did I say? We've got 21 slogans to go. But there are several particularly potent ones, I think, in this remaining in this section that Michael started last week, entitled The Discipline of Relationship. So I'm going to talk about the remaining ones tonight, and next week, did I say the 8 points? I'm 7 points. Michael will talk about the 7th point next week, which has a lot of slogans, but on the whole, they just sum up. So we can probably sum up next week. One more week. But the discipline of relationship is this cluster. And you might think, do I really want to be disciplined about my relationships? We think of discipline as following rules imposed by some sort of external authority. And we tend to push back, right? Often against discipline. But life is full of relationships, so many kinds, right? Family, romantic and sexual partners, workplace colleagues, neighbors, members of various kinds of social groups. We are implicitly social animals, right? And our relationships are probably the source of our greatest joys and our deepest sorrows and anguish, leading to great inner agitation, even chaos at times, and taking huge amounts of our mental and emotional energy go to relationships, right? So it might not be such a bad idea to apply a little discipline to our relational life. Not externally imposed, but a kind of inner commitment to paying attention, making careful choices, speaking and acting in accord with our best intentions. And these choices, as I've said, in every area of our lives, radiate outward, sort of a ripple effect, into the realms of our social and political relationships as well, how we conduct ourselves collectively. So please, again, consider how these practices extend to the wider sphere of our present situation. You can see, those of you who have been to at least some of these previous sessions, you can see how the earlier slogans help us cultivate the ground of awareness so we can apply it to our relational lives. The earlier slogans remind us to look deeply into the roots of our suffering, into our habit patterns of self-centered craving and aversion. They encourage us to view the causes and conditions of our lives with a spacious mind, to recognize that our existence is impermanent and that there is no self separate from the great web of interconnection. Deep insight into these truths is wisdom, and at the same time opens into compassion. And the Bodhisattva path, as we know, is not to turn away from the realm of samsara, human suffering, but to enter in with an open mind and a compassionate heart, and the thousand hands of Kanon Bodhisattva, each with a different tool to respond to the beings we meet every day in our lives. This is the training and discipline that we are challenged to undertake. With infinite patience and kindness. So this is a discipline that includes patience and kindness as we undertake it. Choosing to be awake is not an easy path, but at some point we realize that we're just perpetuating suffering with our habit patterns, and we decide to stop poisoning ourselves with greed, aversion, and ignorance. So that's a segue into the next slogan in this section, which is don't poison yourself. As I go through these, if you happen to have something to write with nearby, just make a note for yourself of any one or two of these slogans that just particularly resonate for you. It'll help you remember when it comes to our small groups. So this first one, don't poison yourself. Greed, hatred, and ignorance, the three poisons in Buddhist teaching. And as anyone knows who has tried to go off junk food or some other addictive behavior, simply beating your habit into submission doesn't work so well. You slip, backslide, and only feel more shame and judgment, and punish yourself by poisoning yourself further. Have you noticed that cycle? There has to be a ground of caring. We could call it love. We have to care about ourselves enough to make a change. Sometimes it's actually our love for someone else that motivates or initiates that change, when we realize how much we are hurting them, or our unwholesome habits are hurting them, that makes us shift, motivates us to shift. Their love for us softens our heart and helps us care enough about ourselves to remember over and over with firmness not to take that poison. And when we slip, which we do, because habits are pernicious, we forgive ourselves and we renew our commitment. Not poisoning ourselves is essential to having wholesome relationships, because it seems obvious, but we often don't get it. The relationship will be poisoned too if we poison ourselves. So the next slogan reinforces this one. The wording Norman uses, which comes from that of Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche, is, don't be so predictable. This means don't indulge in your self-centered habit patterns. Don't hang out in the same old familiar ruts. Be willing to take risks. Even small ones are okay. To not act according to your usual pattern. Open to the possibility that this present situation is one that you have never met before, so you can meet it with beginner's mind, with interest and curiosity, rather than, oh, here we go again, because something reminds you of a previous painful experience. You might even surprise yourself with a moment of freedom. Don't be so predictable. The next slogan is, don't malign others. This addresses such a pernicious habit pattern that two of the Bodhisattva precepts are devoted to it. Do not speak ill of others, but use kind speech. And do not praise self at the expense of others, but speak well of others. Those are two of the precepts that we recite when we every once a month when we recite the precepts. So often the default mode for a shaky, insecure sense of self is to disparage someone else, right? This is one of those behaviors that's much easier to observe in someone else rather than oneself. You can catch other people doing that, right? And miss noticing that when you do it yourself. Here's where the discipline of paying attention comes in. The ability to press pause, take an inner step back, sometimes a literal step away, and just not say it. You know, that sarcastic comment, that put down. It's worth learning, if you are aware that you're reactive, you can choose not to respond until you are in a grounded, regulated state. It's worth learning ways to give constructive feedback and communicate authentically and non-aggressively when you do need to speak up. This slogan also includes refraining from the kind of sarcastic or flippant disparaging comments that are so ubiquitous in social media and public discourse these days. Even sort of a competitive thing. Even at the risk of not scoring points for coolness and cleverness. To just refrain a little, yeah? Have you ever listened to someone making, you know, putting others down, making disparaging remarks, and thought, wow, if that's how they're talking about them, I wonder how they talk about me behind my back? Disparaging others does not generate trust, does it? That's a good thing to remember. I really like the image in the next slogan, don't wait in ambush. This is referring to the way we harbor our grudges and our grievances, holding them kind of in hiding, and then we jump out like from behind a rock to like and strike like a rattlesnake when the object of our resentment comes near or when they're a little bit vulnerable and we shoot out with a barbed remark or some meanness. Now, admittedly, this is a defensive posture, you know, hiding in ambush, based on fear of or fear of threat to our self-identity. But so often our perception of that threat is distorted by conditioning, you know, by earlier experiences. It's not necessarily accurate to the current situation. We are always second-guessing people and making assumptions about other people's motivations or feelings. And then we store them up, you know, and kind of reinforce this bias that we hold. Instead of checking, simply asking someone, what was going on when you said that? Help me understand. And it turns out it wasn't as much about you as you thought. Probably like 90% of the time. We expect people to be mind readers and know how much they've hurt us and what we really want of them. But people don't know. Unless we find a way to tell them. Sometimes we even kind of bait the booby trap and wait for them to walk right into it. Ha! See? Just what I expected. No. You don't respect me. You don't care about me. I knew it. Does that sound a little bit familiar? This does not make for healthy relationships. Don't wait in ambush. Learn to come out in the open. Stand your ground with integrity. Listen to the other party. And ask to be heard. And be willing to listen. Build the ground for mutual trust. And allow yourself to be vulnerable. This doesn't mean putting yourself in harm's way or accepting abusive behavior. But letting go of assumptions and second guessing. And where possible, wherever possible, creating the ground for mutual respect and openness. Recognizing that in this territory of relationship, we don't always get it right. We don't always do it with finesse, right? We blunder. But we have to try. And sometimes try again. And all too often, we give up too easily. In our consumer society, we are conditioned to look for flaws, to shop around for something better. We're always looking for the next upgrade, even in relationships. But we can't do that with our family, and that's why family relationships can be the toughest. You can't get an upgrade. Family relationships are such fertile ground for practice. Okay, next slogan amplifies these ones that we've just been looking at. Norman's wording is, don't make everything so painful. Chogyam Trungpa's wording is, don't bring things to a painful point. And a more traditional wording is, and this is the one I like best, never strike at the heart. Don't go for the jugular, your own or someone else's. Don't catastrophize. Know the signs of when, know the signs of this tendency to strike at the heart. Those horribly mean things we say to ourselves or to someone else. A good indicator is those kind of blanket statements we make. You never, you always, I'll never. Watch out for those. Those tend to strike at the heart. The next one in Norman's wording is, don't unload on everyone. But the more traditional wording is, don't load a cow with an ox's load. Basically, it's saying, don't offload your responsibility onto others. Don't blame others for everything you don't like about your life. Don't blame yourself either. Just take full responsibility for paying attention to your life as it is, and then acting, speaking, responding. These slogans, as you see, they keep reinforcing the same message, basically, just different ways of putting it. But then the next one says, don't go so fast. Don't get competitive about this. Don't turn these slogans into one more thing to browbeat yourself with and measure yourself against others with. These practices have to be good for the long haul. So it's good not to be so arrogant to think that we can purify generations of human karma in 2 or 3 years of practice. I don't know how many of you have heard someone else say or said yourself, I've been practicing for, fill in the blanks, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years. And why am I having such a hard time with this? Sometimes life ups the ante on our practice. And instead of saying, oh, I should be able to handle this as a good Zen practitioner, it's time then to have some humility and hunker down for the long haul. Remind ourselves that this process of awakening, this transformation, is both sudden and gradual. It's not just a nice, easy, tidy, straight line. Remember that earlier slogan, turn all adversity into the path. Everything we do or say or don't do or say makes a difference as we awaken together with all beings. Now, there are just a few more cautions in this section, the last few slogans. One is, don't be tricky or treacherous. This one's telling us to be scrupulous about our motivations. Self-interest can be subtle. That need for approval or praise or fear of disapproval or shame can sneak in so easily and contaminate a little bit or a lot our best intentions. So once more, this is a practice of patient attentiveness and letting go. If we find ourselves being just a little tricky, or a lot tricky. Now here's an intriguing one. Don't make gods into demons. This addresses our tendency towards a negative bias, the way we look at the world through the lens of threat to self, to I, me, and mine. We can fall into a rut of constant complaint, blinding ourselves to the possibilities, kindness, and beauty that are all around us. There are many stories in folktale traditions around the world of a beggar appearing at the door, only to be turned away in disgust, who turns out to be an angel or a god or a bodhisattva in disguise. Don't turn gods into demons. The god, the bodhisattva, who's your dearest partner, and sometimes you just, in a moment, turn them into a demon. Right? And the very last one in this section on the discipline of relationship is, don't rejoice in others' pain. Now, your first reaction to this one might be, oh, I don't do that. And you probably don't in a blatant or overt way, necessarily. But it's worth a deeper, a little more subtle investigation. I confess to a kind of desperate fantasy this past week that Donald Trump would finally do or say something so egregious, so outrageous, that even his Republican supporters would have no choice but to repudiate him and have him removed from office. The thing is, he already has. And as his hatred escalates, more suffering follows. So ultimately, compassion must extend to everyone, even to those whose inner torment is expressed in hatred for others. There must be no limit to compassion. The compassionate response is to feel that torment and name it for what it is and name the harm that it does. So I hope you can see how these slogans, or as I prefer, practices about relationship have bearing on every level of human interaction, not just the interpersonal, but the social and political as well. And as we work with and take responsibility for our own hearts and minds, our words and actions extend into every sphere of our lives in this world. So that's all I'll say for now, and I'll thank you for listening. And I'll give you some questions that we can respond to in small groups. So first, please note any of these slogans that particularly resonated for you. Do you need me to review them? Just say them. I think you seem to be paying attention. let's see. So don't poison yourself. Don't be so predictable. Don't malign others. Don't wait in ambush. Don't make everything so painful. Don't unload on everyone. Don't go so fast. Don't get competitive. Don't be tricky or treacherous. And don't rejoice in others' pain. So, what one or two resonated for you? Maybe give an example of how you could practice with this slogan in your daily life, and how would you apply any of these slogans to the larger, wider spheres than the individual? How do they apply? That should keep you busy. So, which ones resonated for you? One or two? How would you personally you know, in your everyday life practice with this, and then how might it extend or apply beyond the personal, beyond the interpersonal? Okay, so we're going to divide up, but before we divide up, I just want to request that anybody who can't stay for the small groups bow out now, so that when we divide up, somebody doesn't get stuck all alone in a group. Okay, here's your chance. I hope you'll stay. Okay, thank you. Michael, can you step in and I'll watch how you do it this time.